companions. We help you discover your many layers. You peel, you cry, you wake up with fresh eyes. Question life, question humanity, question society, but most of all, question yourself.
Welcome, Joe, on this new season of Onions Talk. This is a special season, and I specifically wanted to start with you because we are doing this on Aotearoa, New Zealand, and you are so experienced with lots of different relationships with the government, with the art sector, and many, many years of experience working in this space, and I just thought this would be such a great start just to have a bit of outlining of the context for our international audience of what the art scene in Aotearoa is like. But first, shall we start with a little self-introduction?
Yeah, sure. Kia ora whia, thank you. Kia ora koutou, called Joe Randerson Toko Ingoa. I am a 50-year-old person living here in Te Whanganui, Atara. I live here with my children, who are 16 and 12 years old, and my partner. We live up in Vogelmorn, which is up near Brooklyn. This land is Māori land and is unceded, and I want to acknowledge mana whenua, Ngāti Toa, Rangatira, Te Atiawa, and Taranaki whānui, and all other occupants of this land prior to European settlement. That is a very important point right now because we have a new government who are trying to or turn back Te Tiriti, the treaty. So that is one, I think for me, huge contextual factor about living in Aotearoa at the moment. Is it's a time where all of us, and especially us artists, are wanting to really show our solidarity and kotahitanga with the tangata whenua of this land. So that's me. Yeah, I'm an artist. I started as a stand-up comedian and kind of writer, I guess, and playwright. I used to write a lot of plays, and then I often couldn't find people to direct the plays or maybe do it the way I wanted it to. So I started, I guess, directing my own work, and then started asking a lot of questions about why are we doing plays, like inside theatres? And I don't really like sitting down anyway. I have ADHD. I struggle to sit down. You might hear me banging around during this podcast because I can't even sit down all the time. But sort of like, I just feel like continually like growing out into what is theatre and what does, and where should it be? We're working on a big piece at the moment that is outside in a public park. I really love taking performance out into the streets where there are no financial barriers and no kind of, I guess, expectations of how the audience should receive or move in connection to it. You can literally orient yourself wherever you like as an audience. So, yeah, I'm the artistic director of Barbarian Productions. We got a website with all our projects on it, www.barbarian.co.nz. And yeah, I just am writing, making, loving, collaborating with people. Have really enjoyed meeting you, Fia, since you arrived about like 5 months ago. Yeah, I'm excited about political art interventions. Yeah.
Maybe this is sort of a good segue into sort of sharing how we met. It's quite funny because so I knew Simon from the iTech conference back in Oslo. I think that was like last year, 2022 or something, and then we sort of kept in touch, and I was, you know, tinkering with the idea of moving to New Zealand last year, and I think it was like middle of last year I talked to Simon, and Simon was like, oh, you should definitely get in touch with Joe and the Barbarians, they're so great, and they set up this Vogelmorn Bowling Club as well, which is a community hub. It used to be an old bowling club, and it was sort of like not really used, so converted into a community space and really thriving, lots of arts happening in there, and it sounded like something that I've been wanting to do, like something on my plans for many, many years, but you know, never quite having settled anywhere or having the right sort of conditions to build something like this up. So I thought, wow, that's such a great thing that I would really love to learn, and then we got in touch, had a Zoom. And then Thomas was so helpful with, like, you know, my capability development grant funding application, writing letter of support for Singapore's National Art Council, which is then supporting this podcast series to be made. And it was just like, I was so blown away because I first arrived and I've traveled a lot, but not this far down south in the world. So I've barely got any contacts here. Maybe I knew like two people or something. And Joe's just been bringing me into like meetings. We met up with city council, met up with other artists. We went up to Nuite Korero Arts Conference, which is organized by Creative New Zealand, which is their equivalent of the National Art Council. And just really blown away by like your level of support, not just to me, but generally speaking, the sort of like young practitioners and, you know, people who are in the art scene. And that's something that you do quite a lot in Barbarian Productions as well, you know, like how to share that resource and give it back and like sort of pay it forward, which, I mean, I've traveled a lot and people have been helpful, but I've never met anyone like this level of
well, you know, I think like some of that, I grew up in a Anglican church and I'm not super connected to that church now, but I think a lot of that, I guess the philosophy of it and the spiritual, there's just a lot of generosity in that. And I kind of grew up in community and in a city church as well. So we had a lot of homeless folk were sleeping in and around the church. And that's just kind of like how, that just seems normal to me, I guess. So in a way, I feel like starting up the bowling club as a community space, I think I was just trying to also like manifest the place that I felt I needed to. Like I felt like since that, we're coming up for 10 years now, and since I feel stronger now, that is there. And so I feel like it's a mutually feeding thing. Like you're also very generous back, Fia, and also I want to acknowledge your bravery, because when we first like Zoomed with you and you were like, yeah, like I'm coming over in a month, we were like, oh yeah, and when, why New Zealand and when have you been here? And you're like, I've never been here. Oh, why? Wow, this is so brave. You arrived, you hooked up all these contacts, and you're an amazingly hard worker. And also, you have so much knowledge and contextual experience. So we're feeding off you as well. I just feel like it's a support, or like living in that generous way, everyone wins. And sometimes I do feel a little bit kind of disappointed, or just sometimes like surprised, because sometimes I'm like, that just seems normal to me. And then we sort of go to play with other people and realize that they're just playing a really like a accruing of their own resource game. It's like, huh, like we're not playing, yeah, that's not a game I really want to play. I feel in this city we have a lot of really awesome artists who do want to share and work together, and I think there's a kind of critical timing that is happening right now where maybe some of the slightly more established folk, or ones like us, I guess for me it still burns heavy, the like 25 years of existing really broke as an artist, you know, and it was so hard to get work off the ground. I feel that experience, I don't want anyone else to have to like go through that, and I don't think there's any need to. I feel like we've got a paradigm shift that's changing at the moment. There's like the old guard, which is all about, yeah, our own personal resources, our big one hyperspace that does everything and you hire it off us. And then there's another, the way that we need to be operating, which I feel like any sensible person is realizing we need to do, is sharing resources, reusing what we have, working together. Our government put out a fund called the Working Together More Fund, because they were just trying to get different NGOs to share resources. Like, it's like there's one organization who supports folks with disabilities at high school getting part-time jobs, and there'd be another organization supporting folks with disabilities once they'd left high school getting jobs, and they'd both be competing for funding. And this Working Together More Fund was like, we would prefer you somehow work together because you're both in a very similar space but still keep your differences. But I think that I think the way that our funding is structured encourages us to be competitive and separate, and it's no good for us, and there just isn't the room. Like, we can't I think that with the bowling club, yeah, either people were happy to share space and be like, okay, when do you need to do yoga? Great, well, we need to rehearse here. How can we make it work so that you have a nice clean floor for yoga, but we can still make our papier-mâché masks? You know, like that kind of negotiating and collaborating, which is what theatre people are so great at, because that's how we work together. We devise working with each other in strengths. But yeah, I'm kind of realizing more and more that that's not a common way of practicing, and yeah.
but it will be because we're changing culture.
We're changing culture, and even surviving is a great, amazing thing. I think that is, especially in Aotearoa, where we have an incredible indigenous culture, which despite incredible attack through colonization and like deliberate massacre and slow depriving of resources and all sorts of horrors, like still the strength of Te Ao Māori is so amazing, and I feel that is I'm so privileged and honored to live here in connection with that culture, and then also to be part of a culture where we're trying to work that out, like as Pākehā, as white people like myself, or Tauiwi, how do we be allies, how do we be co-conspirators, is a word someone used recently. Yeah, how do we work together right now, especially with our new government, to keep the decolonization movement happening? Because yeah, we're a lucky country in lots of ways. It doesn't mean it's easy, but sometimes I feel like hope is more, you know, like you say, the new culture is more possible here because we're so small. Mm. We're so far away from everywhere else. And I feel like we know that it works. Like, as small communities, we know that we rely on each other. So yeah, I hope that this movement keeps continuing.
I've got a question around arts infrastructure building, and sort of what is needed to create the sort of conditions that artists would need to thrive. I remember very starkly this conversation that I had in London. It was at Somerset House. It was a discussion around, I think it was like something about the value of a city. And this guy who's like a financial banker was like, you know, people don't come to London because of the banks. They come to London because of the arts. And it's the same with Wellington, you know, it's the capital, but people are not coming here for the government. I mean, well, some people for work, but mostly, you know, people are attracted to the city because there is arts, you know, and it's the theatre practitioners, the artists, you know, all of us like really contributing to the scene here. But then as we see with, you know, COVID, even post-COVID now, still struggling, funding cuts, new government, lots of changes, and lots of changes also with the government around like trying to do away with all the co-governance with the Māori. And a lot of these progressive things that, you know, Labour sort of set in, it's almost like unwiring that and going backwards. And in a time like now, when we are kind of slowly starting to stabilize a little bit after a global pandemic, but still, you know, struggling to find its foot in the arts industry, what does the arts industry need? And this is a conversation that's been quite heated right now in Aotearoa, because, you know, like all the regional arts trusts are talking about it, trying to submit policy papers. And I know that you have a very close relationship with many different stakeholders, as well as the city council, and you have this, you know, really great bird's eye view and very well respected in the industry. What do you see is where we could go, we should go, that, you know, what are the necessary steps or conditions, things that need to be built up to support people, you know?
Yeah, I think you're totally right. That's why people come to, one of the reasons people come to the city is for the arts and artists. And if you take an example like our Fringe Festival, which is really awesome, and council funds it because they know it brings tourists in and it's really exciting and the city is vibrant and lively, but that festival is almost entirely voluntary, subsidized by artists making work. Like most artists who put on shows, and I have been this artist many times, and I've been on the Fringe board as well, if you look at the hours that you would work on that production, and then you add up what you earn from that, which is often nothing, like often you even come out with a debt, that's just so much volunteer labor. And everyone's like, great, we love Fringe being here, but yeah, I just think the work that independent artists do to make those things happen is not visible, and it's just taken for granted. And then you kind of get this attitude, which is like, oh yeah, we know artists don't make any money. And I know people don't really go into the arts to make money, but we should be able to survive, just like any person should be able to survive. So I guess where I'm heading with this is UBI, Universal Basic Income. I believe that if we, and they've tested that, in Waikato, Creative Waikato is doing some amazing, you can go onto their site and see, they've trialed a whole lot of things up there. I wish that, I mean, over this pandemic time, there have been a lot of opportunities, and there still are now, to really trial some different ways. So Hannah Playhouse is one of our big buildings here. What about just trialing making that space free, or even finding a stipend or some way to test the UBI, the Universal Basic Income, and see what happens? Basically, what I think is that when people design structures for artists, they use a transactional commercial model for it. So often I hear people say, we're going to build this new amazing venue for the artists and it's going to be accessible rent. But then when you find out what accessible rent is for them, even though that's heaps cheaper than they would charge a massive symposium or conference, it's still not affordable for most of the arts community. Our big venues here are like $1,000 a day. You know, no one can afford that, and yet those venues sit empty so much of the time. So the kind of radical proposals I'd like to see trialed are like, okay, what if we made this space available 3 months of the year? In between times, we book it out to all the big conferences, but then in the other times we say, hey artists, here's these venues, go for it. Just like Urban Dream Brokerage does, there can be deals signed which are like, if we break anything or damage anything, that's on us. But I would like to see some radical trials of that, rather than just, I feel like we're just tinkering with the old, the basically getting artists to come in and hire spaces. You need to be going, artists, here is the free thing for you. Here's food, here's a space, go for it, and let artists create. Like, I would love to see what would happen if you picked 15 artists in the city and gave them 6 months and access to a venue and saw what came out of it, because I think the whole funding structure of applying for funding, waiting, your project loses momentum, you get it or don't, you reapply, like it can be up to a year before you're actually doing the thing that is giving you vigor and excitement. So I think funding structure needs to change. The way that we expect artists to come and inhabit and engage with our venues needs to change, which is not expecting that they're going to be one of our primary income sources. They give our spirit and our life and the energy. And then I think maybe there's a layer around, you've really just like opened a whole lot of things here, Fia, asking me that question. There's another layer around that, which I think is like, what does support of that look like? I find at this point in my life, I'm 50 now, that so many people want to come and volunteer on our shows. They want to be in the presence of live, fun, creative people, and they get huge amounts out of that. And I think that the support that is needed around artists, I'm still trying to figure out what that looks like in a way that gives artists space and agency, but also maybe helps us get our work out to communities more, which is something like in the realm of either like selling your work or finding some kind of, maybe you make beautiful pictures and then maybe you could make cards alongside that as well, but on recycled paper. Or I feel like there are ways that we can exchange that don't mean we cede our creative autonomy or breach any of our deep values, but also mean that we could return some sort of income to it. So I feel like the whole creative economic cycle I'm deeply interested in, and I hate the myth that artists don't understand money, you know, because we do. It's all we talk about a lot of the time because we have so little of it.
You know what I'm really excited about interviewing you as the first artist is also because you're really intelligent with the sort of economics of things and money, and like very resourceful as a person. I kind of want to bring us back to how Vogelmon Bowling Club started. Not the old bowling club, but how, you know, it's just seated empty right next to your house, and then you went in. Could you like explain that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I had like little kids who were like, I had like a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old or something like that, always out there in my neighborhood pushing the prams around, and would always go past this locked, the gate was always locked. You look in, there's this huge empty green, huge empty building, nothing's happening there. Only thing that happened was on a Friday night, about 6 old guys would come in and have a beer or a Diet Coke because they had liver damage. And I rang a number on the building for 6 months because I rang and left messages like once a month and kept saying, hey, local theatre group, love to get in touch about maybe using the space, or we need a place to store our costumes. After 6 months, they called back, oh, we're having a committee meeting, come along. So I went along. And it was really like, what happens here? And could we use the space somehow? Like, we're artists, we're so desperate, we could hire it with whatever you need. And there was one lady on that club, and she basically rolled the other people and said, let's let Joe hire our old locker room downstairs. That was our foot in the door. We started hiring that at, I can't remember, $50 a week or something like that. And then we started rehearsing more and more. And at the same time, there was an amazing community group kind of gathering because they were going to tear the old hall down, which is beautiful, which is across the green from the bowling club. And so there was this kind of this gathering. It was a bit of a perfect storm of people going, we want community space. The council was also running something called the Kaka Project. Kaka are the birds that fly over, native birds here. And so all of those kind of things were happening. I feel like people were a bit like, we need this space. And it all just kind of coalesced. And we were doing this small hire. And then the bowling club tried to sell it. Luckily, no one bought it because it's not a very safe building and it's pretty run down. We love it. And then after like about a year and a half of negotiating, like Barbarian, our company, said, give us a go at hiring it out. We'll see if we can make it work. We just made it work in time, you know, getting money. And I guess I should also refer that we used to have a place called WACT, the Wellington Artists Charitable Trust, which was about 10 of us independent artists putting $50 in each, took on the hire of this place, and it also had a rehearsal room. So we just had to get like 10 hours of rehearsal, hired rehearsal a week, and we had the space. So I feel like I had a little bit of a history of being like, go on, take a gamble. But that's a hard thing to do. Like, I think it's really hard to take a gamble when you don't have very much money and you don't come from a culture of like, hey, let's buy this and let's like flick it on. Like, that wasn't a culture that any of us came from. So that was really scary, even if it doesn't sound like much money. And it was scary for us with the club. But I guess at that point, I had quite a few friends who were more cashed up, shall we say. And they did some loans and anyway, blah, blah, blah. It sort of kind of came into being. And then it's been like 10 years growing. It's very strong now. There's a bar there. We've nurtured a small kitchen cafe called Damascus that then sort of supported them up, and then they moved out and ran off their own steam. So many things are happening now, but it has been a long time. It's been a great time, but not an easy time. It didn't fall in our laps. Yeah.
So the space now, was it bought over? I heard it was bought for like, sold for a very nominal sum.
We bought it, our trust, so we formed a trust with really watertight deeds about community purpose and that. And we paid for the cost of the subdivision because the bowling club actually owned the club and a little house next door that was like the caretaker's cottage. So we ended up paying for the subdivision cost, which I can't remember, was like under 100,000. I feel like it might have been more like 60, but I can't remember exactly. And the people on the trust who could loan like 10K, which was not something we could do, but they sort of like covered that and then slowly got paid back. So that's a privilege to be in that position to start with. But yeah, that's how we did it. And I'm very interested in the relationships between, like, I felt a lot of tensions between people who either wanted a single space for them or people were happy, people who bought into the value of a multi-purpose space and bought into that when we can rub up shoulders with different people doing different things. You know, that's one of my favourite things. There's been a mushroom foraging workshop and there's these weird mushrooms in the fridge and then we're rehearsing and then yoga's coming in and then hand drumming and then, you know, like all of that. I thrive on that. I don't want to be just in like an arts centre. Yeah. I want to be in the midst of everything that's happening in my community, and also I want other people to have access to what we're doing.
But also congratulations, because it's the only community space in Wellington that is not funded by Wellington City Council, which is like a huge feat.
Yeah.
And I wanted to highlight this point just because a bit of context, a bit of history, but also there are lots of activities that happens at BBC, like the Halloween or like Christmas and stuff. And you bring in young artists to, you know, do stuff there and perform, and they are paid to do so. So, you know, it's really like, it's not just a space. You're not just an artist, you're a community connector. And that's the role that a lot of us play, you know, like socially engaged practitioners. Mm. You're not just making art, you're actually being so resourceful, connecting people, connecting resources, making things happen out of nothing.
Mm.
And I feel like this is such a like difficult, but, you know, wonderful moment when you have built up this, I wouldn't say empire because it's not the right word, but, you know, community, community of support and like enough relationships, like, you know, genuine relationships such that you're actually able to support the younger folks in the community as well. in context, this is the real stuff that's, you know, happening and you've made happen, and at a local sort of level.
I remember reading a book, I think it was called something like The Social Entrepreneur. In my memory, it was a story of a priest who got given like a South London parish to look after and was like, great, I'm going to reinvigorate the parish and bring everything back to life. And then after a few months was like, the church is dead here. What else can we use the space for? So someone wanted to build a boat and they were like, cool, take over the church hall and build a boat in there. And then other people started dropping in, and some new arrived immigrant communities who didn't share much language but were like, knew how to paint. And all these relationships started forming, and then a childcare group said, could we like use the church? We're desperate for space, you know, Monday, 8 till 4, Monday to Friday. And so then the church would still have its Sunday, like they figured out how to roll the cross up and down so it like got out of the way. This kind of, that really helped me. Like I feel like there have definitely been significant things that have opened my eyes to possibilities of taking over spaces, of occupying it differently. And yeah, it just kind of seems normal to me in a way.
But I kind of want to also like talk a bit about Green Green Room. We're literally sitting in it now, but
totally.
It started with nothing. And I remember like first couple months arriving and you're like, okay, Fia, do you want to join this city council meeting with the arts team? And then I went and I had no context of New Zealand, knew nothing. And then there were a bunch of people there. Everyone seemed quite supportive from the city council, which I was really surprised because I never get meetings with like city council or anything in any other countries that I've worked in. We didn't have that sort of relationship and they were not as accessible. And they all seemed like really supportive. And you were like, right, we need space. The arts community needs space. There are lots of empty spaces around. Also, like being new in the city, walking around, there are lots of these buildings right smack in the city center that's just empty because it's got these signs that's not earthquake safe and blah, blah, blah. And I was just wondering, oh, what is going on in the city? And we were like there sort of literally knocking on door in city council and nobody had the answer, like who had the keys to anywhere. And we're like, okay, we need a space where theater materials, arts materials after each production can be recycled and not just gone straight into the skip, which is usually what happens. And there is so much waste in this sector. Also because, you know, resources are limited. People don't maybe have extra budget or time or, you know, energy to find ways to recycle, or there aren't really the right kind of places to recycle things. So we're like, okay, we need this theater resource hub library sort of thing. And you just brought together like all these experienced practitioners in the scene who have tried to put proposals together over the last 15 years or so to get something going, but never really happened, or like, you know, just sort of dwindled away. And then we had the Hui and, you know, things just started coming together. We applied for the Waste Minimization Fund and we got it. And now we have a concrete space given to us for a short period of time by Urban Dream Brokerage. And it's actually functioning and up and running. And we're even thinking of expanding to, you know, a container space and an extra sort of like office space for more storage. And all of that would not have been possible if you didn't already have, you know, those relationships with people and was that sort of like key person to just bring people on board together to work on something. And I'm just so blown away by how supportive the community has been, you know, giving their time and resources to build up the shelves. Like even the shelves alone was like 150 kilograms worth of materials that was sitting in Marcus's shed like 20 years ago that he found somewhere in like a rubbish skip and never found its place. And now it's, you know, put to good use. Ralph and Hannah, Trick of the Light Theatre, really putting in so much time and energy with me to write the proposal and everything. And now it's, you know, it's become something. It's we real. Had a launch last week with city council people and like other folks in the industry, and everyone's just, you know, really happy to see it going.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, this would not have been possible if you weren't just like, let's do it, guys.
Well, I feel like it's all of us. It's total team effort. And like, it also wouldn't have been possible if you, Fia, hadn't like arrived and been willing to let us pay you to write the application, you know, because you could see us. We're all so busy and juggling children and all sorts of things as well. And I feel like the knowledge that you brought and your read on what was happening here and framing things to, like, you are a key piece in this puzzle as well. And as you say, Trick of the Light are a key piece, and Annalisa and Marcus and the whole community around, really. This idea has been yeah, it's popped up several times over the last few years. We know that people finish off their theatre shows and dump things straight into the tip. Or often you see people being like, we've got this really good quality dance floor or timber or something, and we don't have anywhere to store it. Does anyone want it? And then everyone else is like, oh, I'm on tour at the moment, or I'd love to, but I don't have anywhere to store it. So we've known that's something our community needs. And I think when people feel the vision coming into being, like, that's why I think so many people have stepped up to say yes, because it's a beautiful idea. And Trick of the Light were key to me too, because like they, you know, they said they'd just got that grant from Manatū Taonga, Ministry of Culture and Heritage, for better resource sustainability and greening our practice. So their energy was really like key. Like without any of those people there, I don't think it would have happened. But I do hear what you're saying. I do kind of accept more and more that I don't want to say I'm a bully because I don't like that word, but there is something about sort of like almost brutally forcing, like sometimes I feel like I have to drag, although I know this sounds really bad, but it's like to make people believe that something is possible. Yeah. Like there is so much cynicism and doubt and fear, and there is every good reason to feel those things, and I feel a lot of them too, but I think there's something about being this age that I'm at now and seeing lots of things come and go, you know, and seeing initiatives be like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if that happened, and then it doesn't. Like I've been part of so many failed initiatives, and all of those have been training for this as well and helped for me to go like, you know, this is the time now. There are enough pieces of seaweed in this wave that is about to break that it could really be substantial. Or go sometimes, no, let it go. Do that in 6 months' time. But this, there's been a critical momentum in gathering, and COVID has been part of that too, which has seen a lot of artists come back to New Zealand and Wellington who would have been touring otherwise. So it's a critical moment. But yeah, I do accept that one of my important role seems to be, sometimes we talk about me being like the prow of the ship or something, because I'm really not very good at follow-up. I try to be, but I do feel like it's my ADHD. I'm always excited by the next thing, and I'm like, we could do this, and I'm quite forceful with it, and then I guess I expect that, you know, most of those things won't happen, but sometimes they do. And yeah, it's cool being part of a team that this one has, the bowling club and this yeah, are both really, it gives me so much joy and faith and heart that this, that these things can happen.
But everyone plays a different role in the whole change making scene, and this is what you do best, and this is what also the sector needs.
Yeah. I feel I can be a foghorn sometimes, and I'm a performer and I'm loud, and my dad was a preacher, and so I come from a family who say things like earnestly, and I try not to be too earnest or too polemic and always be checking myself. I think that's what I love about clown as a practice, is it always like, you're a dick, you're a fail, you know, you got ego on your face there, you spilled that all over your pantsuit, whatever. That's really good for me, because I think we're all amazing and we're all strong, and we're also all crazy, needy, vulnerable, flawed people. We're all of those things all at once. Yeah.
I sort of usually end the podcast with this question. If there's one thing that someone could do to create change in the world, what would it be? But I'm going to rephrase it a little bit, because I feel like 50 is quite a like pivotal age. And I think there's probably a lot of reflecting that you've been doing as well. Like looking back, looking forward, what do you want to do more? What kind of role do you want to sit into more? And also, you know, if you could give advice to younger folks who are still figuring things out, what would it be?
I feel like one thing I want to do for me now is kind of not, I think I've spent like a lot of my life sort of sitting on my hands or like biting my tongue and thinking, who are you to say that you don't know? Or maybe like believing it when people say, you don't know anything about finance, you're an artist, or you don't know this, or you shouldn't be a director, or you know, all of that. I am now at a point where I'm like, I'm trying to really follow my gut and my instinct and my belief in myself and my belief in other people. So I feel that's what I'm trying to act for myself, and that's kind of what I would like to try and help everyone keep activating, like, is to believe in ourselves and to believe in our power and to believe that when we are part of things that don't feel right or don't feel good, that it's really cool if we can find a way to say that we would like it to be going a bit differently. And I know that's really hard, and there's a lot of situations where it's too much to say that because you might lose your job or you might, lots of things are at stake. But I feel like I'm now, yeah, both trying to like let myself off the hook of censorship and let myself be more free, but also to help encourage that as much as possible, especially in younger folk. Because yeah, I see that it's a hard world to be in. It's hard for all of us, but it's especially hard, I think, if you're younger and coming into this and like, what is this place? And it's very hard to find hope, and we have so much information coming at us. I think if there was one thing that I thought you were going to ask, like, that everyone would do, I was like, that everyone would spend 10 minutes a day away from a screen in nature or in some sort of meditative practice where we could all still our minds and our breath and calm, because I really think that screens are doing, they're wonderful for us, but they're also not helping with our anxiety and depression, and all the statistics bear that out. So yeah, that's a little bit neg. Let me try and just say it on a bit of more positive. Everyone had a little bit more space and calm to reconnect with themselves as animals, which we are in nature.
Sounds like barbarian production. Thank you, Joe, for being on the podcast. Thanks, with us. Thank you for sharing all your knowledge. Awesome. And good energy. And you are back. It's going to be showing on French Festival very soon. So I will share photos and links. People in Wellington, if you want to go hang out at the park with us, please do so. And I will put in Barbarian Productions' website on the episode description. So feel free to take a look, get in touch if you want. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you. Thanks, Fia.
Hello, Onions Talk listeners. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, it would really help if you can leave a review on iTunes or like us on Facebook. Otherwise, subscribe and share it with people whom you think will enjoy this. Special thanks to Andrea for the music. Catch you next episode.